How's the health of your team through eight practices?
I would have said it was good going into today. You know, today's kind of like the line of demarcation. You know, sometimes the military, like, you know, in the Air Force, they have like a line where once they pass it, it means there's no turning back on the mission. Some guys get to that line, and so we had some guys go down today with some soft tissue stuff, it looked like. So, you know, this is always sort of the day where really the wear and tear of camp starts to begin to affect you, as you're in the middle of the third week, third week. So, yes, we had a couple guys today, but I think overall pretty good. I mean, nothing long-term. Leslie Black has had a small fracture in his ankle that had to be a screw inserted into. But other than that, you know, most of the stuff is stuff that's going to be manageable.
Since we're talking to Donovan today, how would you size up how that offense is coming together and building depth behind maybe some of those four, five, six guys you already know a lot about?
Yeah, I think we have. I think the pleasant thing about the O-line is we have some depth of some guys who could challenge to play. So it's not just like, hey, these guys are going to be good players down the line. The guys that are running with the twos and the threes, the days we do twos and threes, I think some of them are proven that if given an opportunity, they could play. You know, offensive line is unique. Sometimes someone looks like a guard, but they really, when they play tackle, they are a natural fit and vice versa. But I think there's healthy competition. And there's a lot of depth being built. The young players that have gotten here, they might not think they're good players yet, but they're going to be really good players. Like, you know, Grant Bricks is doing a great job. Gibson Pyle, really pleased with him. A lot of those guys. But I think that's that tier of guys who've been here for a year or two, I think they're pushing the older guys. The older guys might not realize that, but as I see it, there's a bunch of guys I think could play.
When you look at the quarterbacks, do you even think in terms of separation right now? Are you looking for separation?
I'm always looking for separation, which means, because that means one guy's doing a great job, and then usually what happens is the next guy catches him. You know, we're all, you know, he realizes, oh, I better pick it up. When you play with a great player, I'm not calling anyone a great player, I'm saying when you play with a great player, or you play with someone who's doing things that you're not doing, it usually forces you then to catch up. So like the first day, you know, we have two freshman quarterbacks, kind of a unique deal, right? Used to not be unique, but, you know, one guy comes out, flips the protection one day. The next guy, we have quarterbacks doing things in protections that I haven't had someone do in 11 years, you know, in college football. So it kind of builds a new normal, if that makes sense, right? Like, you're doing something at a high level, I catch you. So, yeah, you know, I my job is to make sure that all the quarterbacks, all three and all five, we're not here to pick the starter. We're trying to make them all good enough to be the starter. We're trying to get them as good as possible. But separation shows that someone's achieving, and usually when you point it out, other guys, you know, start to follow.
Because you have those two guys who were both unique as early enrollees and playing the same position, do you see anything about the dynamic between those two that's changed, that's evolved, that where they've, you know, pushed each other, kind of like what you're suggesting there? How does it work between Dan and Danny and Dylan?
The way I'm able to see it, because of my role, is really just more in the play with things I see happening. You know, within any offensive pass play, we run the same play that maybe the Los Angeles Rams run, that someone else runs. It really just comes down to the intricacy of the things the quarterback's able to take advantage of. Whereas some people might just say, hey, throw it to him. If he's not open, throw it to him. If he's not open, throw it to him. As you get more evolved, it's like, well, if they give you this coverage, you also have this out here. And if you see one-on-one, you can go back here. And hey, if they show you this blitz, protect yourself this way. So really it's in the evolution of what the players can handle as you kind of scaffold your teaching, right? Okay, they know they mastered this. Let's teach the next thing. They've mastered this. What happens, I truly believe in that scaffolding process, right? As you're taking your time to teach them the next thing, when you have one player doing something here, the next player quickly catches up. As I said to you guys, players learn from players way more than they learn from us. So that's what I see. I see both guys doing things that are really, really high level, but they're taking advantage of the things within our offense that maybe haven't been taken advantage of as of yet. And I think all three guys are doing that. And so that's been the really good thing. You know, today's going to be, as I told them out there on the field, today's going to be a day. What's happening to us, and it's part of culture now, right? You know, like everyone's waiting at home for us to put out something from practice today. They want to see the highlights. The highlights haven't been the reason why we haven't been to a bowl game in the last 6 years. It's the lowlights. And so I'm more of a, hey, what are the defects? Eliminate the defects type of a coach. And so, yeah, we have some unbelievable wow plays. But let's talk about the amount of sacks we're giving up, or the big plays we're giving up, or the missed assignments that we have, or the missed opportunities in 2 minutes. So also making sure that we're coaching the what not to do and what to avoid. That's really the step for the quarterbacks, because both guys can make dynamic plays, but our season will be dependent upon how many times we beat ourselves on a play and how many times we don't. And that's really what you worry about with freshman quarterbacks, or what you have to teach for freshman quarterbacks.
How is the protection so far for the three quarterbacks from the line?
I think it's been good. I think it's been really good. I mean, we've had a lot of protection errors at the running back position early on, with just, you know, guys who haven't really played. I mean, Tony brings, I mean, if you can learn protection versus this group, you know, some teams that you face in the season are not going to be quite as much. You know, we don't play Michigan this year, but, like, you know, Wink Martindale's the defensive coordinator of Michigan, a man whom I truly respect. And we played him in the NFL and was like, all right, guys, if we can pick up blitzes this week, we should be good the rest of the year, because they just challenge you in every way. They're challenging us with all the pressures. And so sometimes they get home. Sometimes we make mistakes. In terms of the pure just a one-on-one pass pro technique, I'd say we've gotten significantly better. And you have to, when you have Danny and Dylan in, you're protecting with a little different mindset than when you have Heinrich in, like last year when we had like a Chubb or a Jeff, guys who would, you know, we're almost hoping to create some sort of interior seam. We're hoping that they come underneath and get them outside, let them see the field and run. These quarterbacks are elite at moving within the pocket, stepping up. So we truly want to build like an NFL cup style protection where we're never getting beat inside out, and trusting that the quarterback versus an edge rusher will step up. And so the defense doesn't like me very much sometimes because they're coming off the edge and yelling sack, and I'm laughing like, yeah, right. But I think all these little nuances are really important as we put together this year's team.
You may have the second tier players that are pushing the first tier.
Guys have been running with the second team. You know, Mike has been running with the second team. Tyler Knox been, you know, done a great job. You know, Justin Evans, you know, he's starting at guard, also goes in sometimes at center and does a fantastic job. You know, Knox, guy I've been really pleased with, just watching him sort of move around. Lutowski, while he might be running with the ones at guard, when he goes out to tackle, I think he does a fantastic job. And so, you know, Mashaik Shack was doing a great job. He's got a little banged up. Hopefully he'll be back here soon. Ruquan, making the transition, still learning all the nuances, but once it's all figured out, I think he's going to be really a good player. So probably missing some guys there. I don't mean to, but I just think that whole group of those guys, at any of them at any point, I think could walk in and probably play and play really well.
Is Ruquan an inside guy?
And he's playing guard, yes.
Yeah, and does Bricks fit there too? And then do you like eventually see him being somebody who will go out and play tackle? Or?
Yeah, Grant's playing tackle right now. You know, I think anytime you recruit a tackle, you try to play him at tackle. It's harder to find tackles than guards. You know, sometimes you can go overtake the D lineman that's struggling and move him to guard, and all of a sudden they're a great player. Tackle's a whole different animal. So Grant, to me, has a bright, bright, bright future at tackle. He can play tackle at this level. He's put on a lot of good weight since he's gotten here. He's extremely conscientious, straight-A student, going to be, you know, do everything right on the football field. It's just he just needs reps.
Hey, Matt, you had mentioned Tony a minute ago. Big picture question on him. You've spoken about encouraging guys to get head coaching jobs. On the flip side of that, he did stay and he's here. I guess to continue to build on what you guys started defensively last year with the improvement, I guess, how big was that he's still around?
Yeah, well, I think anytime we can have consistency on the coaching staff, we're excited. You know, when you think about it, you know, we did make the move adding Glenn, you know, to be the quarterbacks moving Sapp, but we still kept Josh here. And so being able to maintain the coaches that the players have relationships with, I think is vital. Player, you know, the men that they can trust, and consistency in teaching. You know, no matter who you are, you're going to add a different wrinkle when you coach a position. So having Tony here, I think it's been great. You know, behind Tony, obviously, you know, you have Coop, you have T. Knight, you have Rob. But just as importantly, you know, we have Kevin McGarry, who's a longtime head coach, senior defensive analyst, you know, been in that system. Jack Potenza has been taking the Jacks as a graduate assistant. He's ready to be a position coach. He's been taking them one-on-one, and I think the play of the Jack position, I think Chief Borders is doing a fantastic job this camp. I think MJ's really coming on. You see McGahee as a freshman, and it's because I think we've given them to Jack and let him just kind of coach them. Josh Bringwell's been in the system. He played in the system. So you have all these guys who've kind of been in that system. We took, Shevin as a graduate assistant. He's been with Coop before. And then we took Adam from offense and moved him over to defense. I truly believe Adam's really a bright young coach. I think coaching on both sides of the ball really helps you. It's one of the things that I did as a young coach is that I've coached on both sides of the ball. And I think he brings something to the defensive staff as they break down opponents that's vital. So fired up to have Tony back. I want everyone to have a chance to be a head coach, mainly so they can call me and be like, oh, you were right. I'm sorry. I complained all the time, Matt, you know, how hard it is. But Tony will have his chance.
How much have you been able to talk with Troy Dannon since he's been here and just your early relationship? How's it gone? Just kind of talking about some of the needs and wants moving forward in the athletic department.
Yeah, Troy's comes down every day. You know, I've seen him every day. We've gone out to dinner a couple times. I've had a long history, not professional, but, you know, just kind of semi-professional and personal with Troy. I think the big thing with Troy is, you know, when you've seen it at the highest of levels, right? When you've been to a team that just won the national championship, when you've been to a team in the group of five that's gone to those high levels, you know what it's supposed to look like, you know? So, if maybe I come in and I say, hey, we really need this, you know, he has a perspective of, I know why we need this because everyone else has this. And so maybe some of the requests I make, and I make a lot of requests, maybe some of the requests I make don't seem quite as, you know, crazy to him because he's seen a lot of people, been around a lot of things. But I think everything's gotten off to a good start. You know, he's not just here for me. He's here for all the sports. And I'm sure he's trying to, you know, make his way around and get to know all the coaches and all the staff. But I'm really pleased with everything so far with Troy.
Speaking of doing things at a high level, you and Don Staley overlapped at Temple. Did you have any interaction with her back then? And the early days of now, what she's been able to do at that point?
Yeah, you know, when I got to Temple as an assistant coach, I mean, Coach Cheney was the head men's coach and Don was the head women's coach. You talk about, you know, two Hall of Famers. I don't know Don, you know, very at all. I was an assistant. I was just working. Other than I watch everything she talks about, you know, I'm one of those coaches. I go listen to other coaches. So I listen to, you know, Kara Lawson, you know, I listen to her. I've been listening to Coach Hurley, Danny Hurley a lot recently, you know, kind of the way he's building his team. So I love to listen to other coaches. And I think what she's done there is absolutely phenomenal. I'm a huge fan. She represents North Philly and Temple and many other places in an unbelievable way.
Last spring, you look at John Bullock. He goes from walk-on defensive back to now he's starting linebacker with a prestigious, you know, single-digit number. Are there any guys, and I know it might be a little bit early, but are there any guys who are kind of following in his footsteps this spring?
That's a great question. I don't know that. Gosh, I should have said this. I think we have a lot of guys doing really, really good things. I don't know that I can answer that. You know, I think we have a lot of guys doing really, really, really special things right now. And a lot of our non-scholarship players, I think, are playing at a high level. I can't think of anyone. You know, I talked about Maurice Mazuka a little bit. But, you know, I can't think of anybody that's not making that move.
Do you think his evolution has kind of inspired, like guys on your team to be like, okay, look at what John did. Now I can, you know, I can do that.
Well, it eerily goes back to the conversation about how the two quarterbacks are affecting each other, right? Like, you know, this year we'll have some guys go in the draft, right? Maybe someone will get drafted. Maybe they won't. I'm hoping some guys get drafted. Next year, let's say we have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 guys drafted. As a young player, when I practice every day against somebody and they're within my realm of potential and I watch them get drafted, it becomes much more possible for me to get drafted, if that makes sense. When I'm a non-scholarship player and I see other non-scholarship players bust their tail, wait for their turn, keep grinding, not complain, just fight and eventually get rewarded, it tells me that, hey, that's possible. And then I now have a blueprint for what to do. And so I think both of those things are possible. It's just like, you know, there's been players in the state sometimes in recruiting that some of the staff, recruiting staff's like, well, I mean, he's, I'll say, let's watch the film. He's good enough, right? He's a scholarship player. We evaluate them off the film. We have a film evaluation. And they'll say, well, he's a four, and which means we think he'll be a multiple year starter. And I'll say, well, then we should offer him a scholarship. They're like, well, I think maybe we can get him as a walk-on. I'm like, well, if all we do is offer players in the state of Nebraska walk-on opportunities, then every guy's going to grow up waiting to be dreaming of getting a walk-on opportunity. If we offer player scholarships, then guys have the dream of, well, maybe I could be a scholarship player. And we have some other guys, you know, coming in as walk-ons too. So I just think it's really important that if you show the players, hey, if you're a non-scholarship player, a walk-on, someday you'll do this. Hey, if you follow our process, someday you'll get drafted. Hey, if you come to our camps and you're a good player, we're going to offer you. They start to see that's possible, and then that's within their realm of possibility, if that makes sense.
I remember last year, a lot of optimism around the running backs, saying it's a really good group. At this moment, with the injuries and maybe some of the inexperience, how do you feel about that group of players, and how far do you want them to come in the next 2.5 weeks?
Yeah, I think it's one of those deals where it's really going to be about the fall. I've seen what Ramir can do. And what I have to make the staff do is go back and watch the 21 Michigan game sometimes to see him when he was like the feature back. I don't know why he wasn't the feature back in 22, but he wasn't, so it was hard to see. Sometimes you can look at a guy like that, like, we should play him here, and you give him this limited role. Like Ramir was, lining up and taking outside zones against Michigan and slicing and dicing. I've seen Gabe at his best. We saw Emmett evolving into a guy that could take games over. You know, when you look at the run he had at Purdue, you look at the run he had at the end of the game to set us up. I can't remember Maryland, Wisconsin. I think he had a run in both games to set us up on the last drive. He's getting ready to bust out. I'm a big fan of Ives. Since if you guys look at it, every time I've talked about Quentin Ives, I believe he can be this, right? I believe he can be this. So this is a big camp for him. You know, whereas Emmett's trying to take the step into dominant player, Quentin's trying to take the step into, hey, I'm going to be here every day, know what to do, be healthy. And then Dante's in the same boat, right? Dante's trying to take the step into every down back. But the things I see that are positive are really positive. But I think a lot of that's going to come to fruition in the fall. If you're a team to me that has just one back that you play and he has 25-plus carries, A, you're not doing right by him, because he's going to be all beat up when it's his chance to go to the NFL. I mean, we've always wanted to have a 20-carry back and a 12-carry back and then a third. You know, we want to play three guys. And we certainly look like we have enough guys to do that. Okay. Did you have something to do?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
Before I walk in here, I tell Keith, make sure this is quick. And then he does that. Then I say, anybody else, so that you guys think I'm a good guy, even though some of you guys know I'm not really. So it's just a little – he's the bad guy. He's the nicest guy I know, but he's still the bad guy. So if anybody has anything, I'm happy to answer it.
In the grand scheme, I think you would have a scrimmage this Saturday. And what's the level of importance in your mind?
It's just an assessment for where we are right now, right? I told the players before practice, a lot of them think in terms of spots. Like, I got my spot. No, I don't think about – honestly, I don't ever really believe you know – until the guy's played for you for a couple years, you really don't know who your starters are until, like, after game two sometimes. Like, you think someone's a starter, then you see them play and it's a little too big for them, or you see someone play and they're just so comfortable. So I don't really think in terms of spots. I think in terms of, like, development. And to me, there's, like, this line, okay, hey, he's good enough to win with. And so if you're above that line, you're going to play, right? Some weeks – I mean, we're in the Big Ten. We're playing in weather. We're playing on turf. Guys are going to get beat up. So you better have, not just three defensive line starters. You better have about five or six. So I'm just trying to see where assess where they are right now. A big thing for me is, are they at the right position? You know, what are their opportunities they should get moving forward? But this is by no means like this decides anything. This is just a statement for where they're, because I really do believe in, like, I come out and I think I'm going to play, like, at this level, and I play at this level, and the guy I'm competing with plays at this level. Great. Now let's see what your behavior's like the next week, right? Like, parents, we mess that up all the time. I mess that up as my kids, they need adversity to spur them on, to drive them. And I kind of look at this as like a ping pong match. You have, like, this scrimmage one, then you have scrimmage two, then you have kind of that spring game, which – the spring game can be, last year we kind of ran everything. This year I'm sure it'll be a little more vanilla, but in terms of what we run for many reasons. But you still get to see who can block and tackle and all those different things. So it'll be important. And it won't, we won't only scrimmage. We'll practice some too, and then we'll scrimmage some too. So we really have to take a lot of time to work on our end of game, 2-minute situations with the way the league runs, with our recent history, but also with you know, really a sophomore quarterback in Heinrich, who, you know, who's only played 1 year, and two young quarterbacks and young receivers that we need a ton of the 2-minute reps. So we'll probably rep a lot of those situations first. And then when they're tired, go live and, you know, tackle and see if we can tackle and block.
Big picture question.
Sure. This is my last one.
So we're nearing the end of the COVID year, guys. How have you seen that from, you know, being here the last 2 years affect the game, but also from your perspective as an NFL coach, how did that affect how, like, the draft process with those guys getting extra years? And what is that domino effect kind of like?
Yeah, it's been unique, you know. You know, I wasn't able to stay around the NFL long enough to see many of the COVID year guys, but I think it's just been unique. And, like, you know, you have 6-year guys. I think, you know, with all the portal movement, you know, a lot of guys have benefited academically from, hey, I have a 6-year. Like, I think when that's gone, we'll, you know, transferring a bunch, how that's going to affect graduation is going to be interesting to see. But by and large, after going through it and being around guys, you know, that have taken advantage of the COVID year, I think it was a good thing. You know, I think it was a good thing for them. You know, a lot of their development was stunted. A lot of their recruiting was stunted because they didn't have a chance to lift and work out. So one thing I did notice was that first year after the portal year, I think, I can't remember how that went down. Well, anyway, that first year, like, I think we coached the Senior Bowl that year, and the players looked all, like, smaller to me. They looked under, well, then you start realizing, like, they had gone a year of no training table. They'd gone a year of no lifting. They had gone a year of, and well, I think a lot of people think we lift and eat and try to get these guys big and strong for performance. We do. It's also for health and, you know, injury. So I think the COVID year has been good. As we come to the end of it, I think it's great. You know, I don't think it's great when you have 26-year-old people and 25-year-old people playing against 18-year-old people, 17-year-old people sometimes. So I think as we come to an end of it, keeping football to 4 and 5 years is probably the healthiest thing for the game and for health and welfare. But, you know, our kids suffered. All of our kids suffered during COVID. I think nationally, sometimes some people don't realize as much because they were maybe in a place that didn't shut down. Like, you know, my kids were in school for out of school for a year and a half. Some places in the Northeast for close to 2 years. So, you know, in the end, it's probably the best thing. But it'll be managing the roster has been really unique, right? Like, okay, he has a COVID year, he doesn't have a COVID year, and just trying to handle that's been a challenge. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.